It's the Bridge House Theatre Podcast.
Yay.
Again.
Hey.
Again. Hello. It's episode 5, question mark? I want to say five. If you've got this far, thank you. And I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, yes, to the 4 people that listen to the podcast, we really appreciate you.
Of which 3 are in this podcast.
This is not true. Even I don't bother listening to
that's
it.
That's true. Yeah, it's fair.
We're back again to chat some more theatre with you.
And today we have Emily Carding.
Hello, Emily.
Hello. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you too. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. We've had a busy old week down at the theatre.
Good. I'm really looking forward to getting there and seeing it finally.
Yes.
It's been fun.
So listeners, you may not know that Emily is on our literary team, but hasn't yet been to the theatre itself. So we're very excited that Emily is joining us today for this podcast and then for 2 shows.
It's a double big podcast as well. It's an extra treat in that you have Emily twice.
No cloning required.
Speaking of cloning, as it's a sci-fi thing, that seems like a good lead-in to your first show.
That's a very tenuous thing.
It's not too tenuous.
A magnificent tangent, and I'll have not a bad word said against it. Let's talk sci-fi, I guess. Sci-fi and Shakespeare, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. In terms of sci-fi and Shakespeare, the two seem weirdly unconnected, but for those, especially Star Trek nerds amongst us, will know that they all sort of tie together pretty well and have a long history of going well together. And I would argue that Shakespeare himself wrote what could be considered the science fiction of the time with The Tempest.
Yeah, that's very
because fair. The science of the time was, you know, had its roots in alchemy and the sort of things that Prospero might have been practicing. So
yeah, absolutely. Anyway. And we've got fantasy with the witches in Macbeth and the fairies in Midsummer Night's Dream and Ariel in The Tempest and stuff like that. It wasn't grounded in too much realism, but all very relatable nonetheless. Tell us about Quintessence and tell us about what it is you're doing and how you're marrying these two worlds.
Sure, thanks. It was originally a commission from London Science Museum. I think it was 2018. Who knows? They did a creative call out for proposals connected to Frankenstein or inspired by Frankenstein for a festival they were doing to celebrate Mary Shelley's work. And they had this amazing open day where you could come and hear all these different amazing scientists who were experts in various fields. To do with Frankenstein, you could hear them speak, and then we did group activities and all went away inspired. It was a really great day, and so from that I had all this stuff about AI and cloning and genetic manipulation and all of this in my head, and I thought, right, okay, what I don't want to do is come up with something that's just Frankenstein but it's an AI, or Frankenstein but they're using cloning. I want to do something that's a bit more of a twist on that. And then also I'm a massive Shakespeare nut. So the idea that I came to them with was an AI in the future has to recreate humanity. So that's the sort of creature, creator, creature cycle sort of complete, and which is who's creating who. And then the Shakespeare nerdiness came in with, and they have been given the works of Shakespeare as a guide to what the human spirit is. And so mine was one of 3 proposals out of everybody that was there, and some people who weren't there that day that was accepted and funded to be put on at the Science Museum. That was an early version of it. It was called Humanity 2.0 then. Because apparently Quintessence was always my original title, but apparently people didn't know what it meant. So the Science Museum asked me to change it, and then I just stubbornly changed it back afterwards.
What was it? What was it called in its first iteration with the Science Museum then?
Humanity 2.0.
Humanity 2.0.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so I took it away and developed it a bit further, and did Brighton Fringe and Edinburgh Fringe. It won an award at Brighton Fringe. And originally at the Science Museum, I was in full body paint as well. Now I'm just in spandex.
Full body paint.
Full body paint. That's amazing. With spandex or totally nude? Just full body paint and nothing else.
Oh man, it was mostly body paint.
And some strategically placed
rubber nip covers, and I did have pants on that were also painted. I'm very glad I had pants on because, well, for obvious reasons, but also because the very first performance of it ended up being moved forward from what I was expecting, and I'm always in this state of like trying to prioritize things because I've always got loads of things to go on at once. And it was brought forward to be an evening performance at some open event they were doing like a couple of weeks before it was going to be, or a week before something. And I hadn't fully memorized it yet. And I was trying and I was stressed and I couldn't reliably get completely off book. So I had my phone, I recorded my lines on my phone at about the pace I expected to be performing it. I don't know whether I should be telling you this, but don't you? And then I shoved the phone down the back of my pants. And because I was playing an AI anyway, and I can get away with a little earpiece, and then played the lines to myself on my phone with an earpiece in, and then said them as the literally seat of the pants.
That's amazing.
Anyway, it's a lot better now than it was then.
The thing is, now you've got full spandex, so you can secrete all manner of it depends how tight the spandex is. Might be quite revealing.
It's pretty. There's no room for secreting anything.
Any phones or anything.
Thankfully, I know what I'm doing now. But yes, very minimalist. Just me in my spandex, and an audience who are the new breed of humanity that I've created.
That's very cool. And is there like elements then, when you say the audience and the new breed of humanity, is there audience interaction? Will people have that to look forward to?
In this show, and also because of COVID, we're trying to avoid anything that is too hands-on with an audience, but it feels immersive. Mm. And there are moments when it might be, it might feel quite intense for an audience.
Good.
But it's immersive in the sense that you are directly addressed by myself as the AI, as this new breed of humans. So you don't have specific characters as you do in Richard III, but you are very much there in that space. It's very intimate and very intense.
Very cool.
And one thing that really struck me when I read the script for it is the interpolation of the Shakespeare and the new text and the way that they complement each other so well. You know, for our listeners, I know that Emily is very, very, very knowledgeable about Shakespeare and Shakespeare's works, as well as a very, very, very good performer of Shakespeare and Shakespeare's works.
Thank you very much.
So, it must have been quite a natural thing for you to put those two together, and you must have had in your head already bits that you're like, oh, that'll work brilliantly. Were there any bits that surprised you?
There's a couple of nifty bits that are a bit more obscure. People go away going, what was that bit from? There's some very obvious. I think the most obvious one for me when I was writing it was a fair bit of Hamlet. Obviously, the title Quintessence, although it has a meaning in and of itself, is taken from what is this quintessence of dust? What is humanity? And that's very much what the show is about. It's looking at what makes us human, what is humanity? So there's a fair bit of Hamlet in there. I was playing Hamlet at the time in two different productions that year, so it was really at the forefront of my mind. So you've got the to be or not to be speech, and it's broken down and becomes a conversation with the AI. But then when I was writing it, I was looking for specific things, like I wanted a bit about bees. And there's this little speech about bees that comes from, I think, gosh, is it some one of the history plays? I think it was Henry V or something like that. So bits that you won't necessarily instantly recognise. Mm. And other bits where you're searching through text and you just find something that fits so perfectly, but it's a completely different context. Mm. So I think that people who are Shakespeare nerds enjoy playing the game of trying to spot where the bits are from. People who are not into Shakespeare will hopefully just enjoy it and enjoy the words for what they are and how they're done.
And hopefully... And
there's a sneaky bit of Frankenstein in there as well, which people always think is Caliban.
I can understand that, actually. Fun fact for you, Mary Shelley actually finished writing Frankenstein whilst she lived in the town I grew up in.
That is a fun fact.
It's a fun Frankenstein fact for you. But yeah, I mean, you're saying about the people...
Joe, I think we need to reassess your definition of the word fun.
Listen, Emily appreciated it.
I do, so, but I am a massive nerd.
Pardon?
I am a massive nerd, though, so...
Yeah, so is Luke, so you can't get all high and mighty. And frankly, if you're listening to a podcast about theatre, you're probably a massive nerd as well,
Very. I'd like to apologise to everybody in our audience that has been offended by my associate director there.
He loves a fun Frankenstein fact.
Exactly. And that is, of course, a fact about Frankenstein, not a fact that is amalgamated from various different other facts. That would be a different type of Frankenstein fact.
Now that I appreciated.
Thank you.
With your words.
See what I did there?
Making the fact.
You can work that into quintessence, Emily.
But going back to what Emily was saying, that's the great thing about the show is that you can be a big fan of Shakespeare and a big sort of, as we said, Shakespeare nerd and appreciate it. But then you don't need to be a big fan of Shakespeare. You know, you don't need to be a science fiction fan. You don't need to be in that kind of like that world to appreciate the joy and the different style of this show. This is what the thing is, you know, it's very, very different to anything perhaps that we've had at the Bridge House before, very different to anything that I've seen. And again, when I was reading the script, I was like, I'm enjoying this so much because it's so different. It's theatrical and it's direct address, which are both, you know, traditional conventions.
We've had a lot of that recently.
But in the actual makeup of the show, it's very unique and
very novel.
You must have had a lot of fun putting it together without the stress of having to have it ready for the science museum. was it fun?
Writing, I rarely find fun. Right. I write books as well. And I love having written something, but the actual writing process is generally done in a panic at the last minute, surrounded by stress. But it was enjoyable in that I could see it coming together. As a massive nerd, I was putting it together going, oh, actually, this feels quite clever and quite good, and I'm really pleased with how this is fitting together. But I was also writing it thinking, is anybody else going to enjoy this, or is this massively self-indulgent? And then audiences who saw it really loved it. I've done a few solo shows, and my fear is always, is somebody really going to want to listen to me for for an hour or for 50 minutes or whatever? So writing not so much fun, but always rewarding afterwards.
I think everyone has that fear, whether it's a solo show or, a full-fledged, more traditional production, are people going to enjoy it? And I think, I know for me personally, I mean, I love going to theatre. I love seeing all sorts of things, even things that aren't necessarily my taste. Oh, if someone says, do you want to go see that? I'll be like, yeah, great. Mm. And I'll say yes very easily to most things. And ultimately, even if I walk away from a show thinking, not my usual thing, as long as it's done well, that's all that matters. And this is going to be a really really fascinating piece of work. And as Luke says, unlike anything else. So I think if you're listening to this and going, oh, that sounds fucking weird, like, I think that people will enjoy it, if for nothing else, than the creativity and the imagination that's gone into this piece.
And also, you know, Halloween's coming up, it's on theme.
It is a bit creepy. Yeah.
It definitely has.
I mean, it's got spandex.
It has spandex, which is always terrifying, especially when I'm in it. But it has a creepy, there's a subtle kind of creepiness to it. And then there's a twist that comes in towards the end that I would encourage you to, like, hold out for. Which it does get properly scary in those bits, but it's also thought-provoking, it's philosophical, it's it's weird in that it is quite different, I hope, but not to say that stuff that isn't different isn't wonderful, but I think that Bowie's quote, you know, never play to the gallery, is something that has always stayed with me. You've just got to make the art that is your art. And it just turns out that, you know, I'm a bit strange and I like sci-fi and Shakespeare and all of these things are things that I love and I'm really interested in. And so I bunged them all together in a thing. And I hope that that people will take something away from that, be it questions or inspiration or trauma.
or
need to wear spandex.
Yeah. I'm going to say, we don't want them taking the spandex.
They can't take my spandex, no, but they're very, please feel free to go and find your own spandex and wear it with pride and joy.
So that is Quintessence with us on the 13th of October at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available from the Bridge House Theatre website. As you probably all know it by now, it's thebridgehousetheatre.co.uk/shows/Quintessence. But you're talking there about Halloween, and you're with us again later on, much closer to Halloween, on the 30th,
yeah,
with another piece of award-winning theatre, Richard III, a one-person show.
Yeah. I love this show so much. I owe this show so much. We first, myself and Kolbrun Bjort-Sigfusdottir, the director, it's just the two of us who made this show, created it at a residency in Tjarnarbio, which I'm still probably pronouncing terribly. I've never been very good at pronouncing Icelandic, but in Reykjavik in Iceland, anyway. And On this 2-week residency, we created this show in 2014. It premiered in 2015 at Prague Fringe. Won all of the awards that they had on offer and blew our minds with that crazy success. And it's been touring the world, with COVID year excepted, ever since. It's Shakespeare's Richard III. The text is Shakespeare. It's cut down to an hour, focuses on Richard's story, and the audience play the other characters. Now, before COVID, that would mean that I would be shaking people by the hand, I would be giving them name tags, they would be coming up on the stage, we'd all be interacting as those characters, and that was lovely. Perhaps it's not so safe to do that now. So this is a new adapted version, where the audience can just stay in their seats and I will address them as those characters from where they're sat, but it's still very immersive and fun, I think I'm safe in saying. This version that I've just sort of adapted, I had a day off from touring As You Like It over the summer, and on my day off, I went and performed it in a spoken word tent for a friend of mine who's organised this tent at a music festival up in Malvern. And it was such a strange experience, but it was so wonderful. I really didn't expect that anybody at a music festival would be that interested to see a one-person Shakespeare play. But the tent was full and it seemed to go down pretty well. So it is something that I think it's been a good introduction to Shakespeare for lots of people, but people who really know and love Shakespeare have also appreciated it. So I think it's something that people will enjoy. Audiences around the world from, you know, it's been all around England and Scotland, but also Pakistan, Russia, New York, Romania, in places where maybe English hasn't even been their first language or their English isn't even that great. Again, it's very minimalist, but somehow it works. That was a long, was that even an answer to something? I'm just rabbiting, but there you That's, go.
No.
To give you a bit of a rundown on what it is.
It's an enjoyable rabbit.
It is fantastic. I mean, Richard III is such a brilliant piece. I did it a few years ago up in Hull with Northern Broadsides, and I remember great Barry Rutter, when he's introducing the company at the beginning, he said, Richard III is Shakespeare's bloodiest play. Like, the word blood is mentioned more in Richard III than it is in any other Shakespeare play. And so textually it's visceral and it's dark and it's brilliant. And then the way that you do this version with everybody in the audience playing all the other roles, it's just wonderful. Like, it's the kind of thing that I, as a performer, I'm kind of jealous that you get to do this, but also like hugely envious that you've come up with this concept. It just sounds to have been such a brilliant journey for a start, to have had a couple of weeks in Iceland to create it. That sounds amazingly fun. Where did you and Colburn meet then?
We met at Exeter Uni. We were both doing the MA. I went on and did the 2-year MFA there in staging Shakespeare. So we met and almost started working together immediately on making things and collaborating. So we've made a few shows. We've made a few shows together. But yeah, we work very, very well together. So this was Col's concept initially, because we'd done a show together called Shakespeare in Hell, in which there were many Shakespeare characters that appeared, lots of multi-rolling. And Richard III was one of the characters I played in that. And I remember going to Col and saying, I'd really like to play Richard III, you know, properly. And she came up with the idea of this solo show. And it's great. There are aspects that, because of COVID, are not what the original show was. It's not, you know, the direct physical contact with people. But I think that the version that there is now is still fun and amusing and still makes you feel as though you're in it. It's been a hell of a ride. It's been a hell of a journey. I hope that one day we can get back to the original version, because I love seeing what audiences do and come up with. But for now, it takes the character of Richard and everything that is the most fun and interesting about him, and also what is the most, puts you directly in line with this morally dubious character, and makes you complicit in his actions, which the original text does very well. So it takes that idea of that direct address that Richard already has and amplifies that times 10.
Amazing. Cool. So if you think that sounds like your kind of thing, listeners, you want to come and be in Richard III, then come on down to us on the 30th of October and see this wonderful multi-award-winning show. Tickets for that one are available, again, from the website, thebridgehousetheatre.co.uk/shows/Richard-III.
It's been lovely speaking to you, Emily.
It's been lovely speaking with both of you. Thank you.
We can't wait to have you in.
So excited to come see the theatre.
Yeah, we're excited to show it to you.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's really beautiful. We've done a really good job.
Very talented.
We're very proud of ourselves. You know?
But on that note, I think we're going to say goodbye to our listeners for today. We've got more episodes coming up when we will speak to other incoming shows like Lucy Harris, for Just Relax, which is basically sold out. Emma Oldfield, who's got Keep It Down, and John Hewer, who's got Dracula. All sorts, basically. So subscribe and tune in and all that sort of thing to hear more from our incoming companies. Otherwise,
for now, we'll say goodbye, listener.
Goodbye, and goodbye from Emily.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.